what my colleagues have already said, but what a good idea was to bring together in one room everybody who has been concerned with work of every archaeological type in the Eastern Desert. And of course, for us who are textile specialists, gives us the opportunity to present our results to the real world, as well as just to talk to each other. And that, of course, is a real challenge. Right, breakfast time at Berenike. The Red Sea port of Berenike lies almost off the bottom of the map in the far southeastern corner of the Roman Empire. Residents, ancient and modern, have always been acutely conscious of the attenuated lines of communication and supply that lead to the site and which also govern their lives. Later today, you'll be hearing more, much more, about the history and archaeology of Berenike from other colleagues. It was a vibrant, cosmopolitan port, full of contrasts in every aspect of its daily life. In this review of the textile finds, we want to draw your attention to two types of contrast. One reflects changes through time, the other, the spectrum of what we now call ethnic diversity. My wife and I took part in the study seasons at Berenike from 1995 to 2001, and then there was a pause, as you know, and Alexandra Placer from Leiden has now taken over our textile analytical role, and her first interim report is due to be published shortly. We recorded, as Lisa has already mentioned, about 3,400 textile fragments. I would say only 3,400, because there were no more. Most of them were very small. They were retrieved from rubbish deposits like the top and across there on the right, and some of those rubbish deposits, especially at the surface, were heavily eroded, not helped by the fact that before we dug, people with bulldozers flattened our main deposits of the early period. The textiles were impregnated and degraded by salt rising from the water table. Many of them were stiff like cardboard, and if you tried to wash them, they became even stiffer. You needed a lot of water to wash them and wash them and wash them. But in those days at Berenike, there was no water in that kind of quantity. So we simply had to work and record with what we could see. There are two principal rubbish deposits at Berenike, and there is horizontal stratigraphy. The first deposit, the earlier one, which is ringed in yellow on this plan, these were interleaved middens of broadly Julio-Claudian date. The closing date of the last papyrus is about AD 72, I think, but the pottery and everything else suggests that the build-up was pre-Flavian. The later deposits, however, were occupation layers in and between buildings on the later town site on the right-hand side. It's a scatter over here, as you can see, but produces a fairly uniform pattern. But that is late 4th and 5th century. We can start with the early group. The pre-Flavian wool fabrics were of excellent quality. Presumably, that reflected the military element in the contemporary population. The army are known from papyri to be particularly demanding customers for Egyptian weavers. In fact, there's a papyrus which many of you probably know, BGU 71564, which has minute instructions about what a hospital blanket should be like and how it should be woven. A lot of it's simple, weight of wool and so on. Many of the terms are untranslatable. But the joke is that the weavers of Philadelphia then complained a year or two later that they couldn't fulfill the order. They had too much business. And so it's an Egyptian situation. And soldiers, I think, were always very cynical about whether the military could deliver what was promised. And that is why they bought so many clothes themselves or persuaded their relatives to give them clothing. But the standard probably is more or less the same. Clothing dyed in reds and blues was the norm. And often you get narrow tapestry woven bands, clavi like this one down here. But also we get checks like that simple one up there, or variegated stripes here. But I think that may be a cloak, but that I'm fairly sure it is some sort of household furnishing. This is our largest find, really very big, bigger than the paper I could bring with me to record it on. That is one side, and then there at the bottom. It probably comes originally from a tunic with clavi, and it seems to have had a slightly dark wool lining, but that was probably in its secondary use. Linen, at the top and on the right-hand side, this here, where are we? There. That was probably a minority fibre, as Lisa has already explained. I think it's a phenomenon not just of the Eastern Desert, but I think it's a phenomenon of the whole of the Roman Empire. Wool is the number one fibre for the military. The upper fragment, just once upon a time, contained wool, red. You can see there a little bit left and a tassel there, which suggests it's a soft furnishing. At the bottom, goat hair in natural undyed colours. There are plenty of goats wandering around Berenike today, so making these locally was quite easy. Many of the wool textiles ended up their useful lives in kentrones, the amalgams of rags sewn together into thick pads. I think they served a purpose connected with pack animals. For example, the wooden saddles that camels are using today in the Ababda territory, underneath the feet of the wooden saddle that sits on its back, there were pads, and this would serve that purpose very well. And they're there from the early through to the late Roman period. Also recovered from the early midden complex was an example of wool tacitae, weft-faced compound tabby, or vestis polymita in the ancient term. It's a complex weave. It's been mentioned already. And here is what it looks like in reality. There's its structure. It's got a front and a back, and they can reverse. And the technique still exists today in Iran. There's a drawing, and there it is in actual practice. It's a very large vertical loom, and the most important thing is the weaver can remember the details of the pattern phenomenally. The memories are absolutely incredible. And this is a simple pattern by comparison with some. The technique of tacitae is probably invented in Alexandria in the sort of intelligentsia circle, but probably by a computer whiz kid, somebody who would be a computer programmer today, because it's that difficult. The Berenike example is, I think, the earliest dated example yet found, but only by about 20 or 30 years. We were surprised at first by the sheer quantity of cotton which we identified at Berenike. It's normally regarded as an exotic fibre. Most of it was plain, as you see in the background, but some of it was also very fine, and some of it was woven as blue checks. Some of it actually looked like paper. It was so fine. There's a technical detail which I've got to explain now, although my colleagues have mentioned it already, the difference between Z and S spin. A spinner can spin yarn on a hand spindle either in the clockwise or the anti-clockwise direction. To avoid confusion, the clockwise direction is referred to as Z spin on the left here, anti-clockwise as S spin. And the central stroke of that letter corresponds to the lie of the fibre, as you can see there, in the yarn. Spinners are controlled by their society. It is conventional which direction you choose, because you don't choose. Spinners in the Nile Valley normally spun S-spun yarn, and only S-spun yarn. The cottons we've seen, however, contain only evidence. Focusing on a population, an Indian population at Berenike in the winter, certainly, who have their own pottery, some of their own foodstuffs, and they're just waiting for July to go home on the ships. And a lot of this is their possessions. The middens yielded two special types of cotton, Indian cotton. Pieces have bands sewn to them vertically and horizontally, as here. That's the piece, it's all invisible virtually, but that's its drawing there. Felicity said, can these be sails? And as soon as she said that, it became obvious that that's what they were, because the binding strips, some of them are webbing, as you see here, purpose made, and some of them are strips with the edges turned back to serve the same purpose, just to reinforce the sails. And you can see here what they look like. This is just a random picture from Ostia. You can see there the pattern of vertical and horizontal strips. And at the junctions, you see here, for example, and there, there are brailing rings, these things, through which the ropes, through which the sails were raised and lowered, pass. There is, however, a problem, which I can't go into now, but it's a fascinating one. The sails are of Mediterranean type, okay, but they're made of Indian cotton, they're repaired in Indian materials, and the repairers only use Indian yarn. Now, that doesn't make sense if it's happening at Berenike, but if it's not happening at Berenike, where is this happening? In India? Anyway, that's a different problem. Now, the Indian sailors brought with them some comforts for the voyage. Very thick mats with a pile, in this case on two sides. You can see the line of pile here, stretching there, another one here, another one there. Here's one of Lena Hammerland's reconstructions, much more comfortable. They brought them with them. We've got 5 or 6 examples from the early Midden. And of course, they would use them at Berenike, but they didn't bring them necessarily for that purpose. Paradoxically, the only other examples of this technique I know are at Vindolanda on Hadrian's Wall at the other end of the Roman Empire, where because I had seen these at Berenike, I recognized in my even more miserable fragments from Vindolanda exactly the same thing, but wool. But in between, for the rest of the Roman Empire, we have no examples that we have yet recognized. But in both cases, it's a very uncomfortable context. Vindolanda is no more comfortable than Berenike. Fast forward now in time, 250 years or more. Comparatively little was happening at Berenike in that time. But the period saw a slow revolution in Roman costume, under the influence of fashions from the periphery of the empire, which we visited at Palmyra already. Compare this figure, Graham Sumner's reconstruction of a Mons Claudianus soldier, and look at the narrow clavi on his cape and also on his tunic. And compare that with the Luxor soldier from the Luxor paintings, and the riot of decoration on his clothing. Clavi with lots of figure decoration, these roundels on his cloak. It's a new world. And we can see it, of course, quite starkly at Berenike, because we have these two groups. So, we move now to the late Roman rubbish from the towns. Some pieces belong to furnishing fabrics. Curtains, as you see, date from Ravenna on the right-hand side, showing these individual motifs scattered across the surface. Just occasionally we find things, garments belonging to people. There's the corner there, recognisable of a cloak, reconstructable like that, with the H-shaped motifs in each of the four corners. The other distinguishing factor of the late group is that the quality has dropped. More decoration, but lower quality product. Tacitae, lots of Tacitae in the late group. They are pretty certainly coverings for bolsters, beds, and mattresses, because they are worn on one side but unworn on the other. And on some examples in museum collections, there are actually feathers sticking to one side. So the purpose is clear. At the top there, we have embroidery. That's a fairly rare technique. It's a pretty miserable example there at Berenike. You could just about see its decoration. And at the bottom, we didn't know what that was. It's probably a child's ball made of felt. And on the outside, there is this wrapping decoration, which in fact is an American. It's called God's Eye. I don't know what it's really called in English or any other language, but you can see the effect and you can see the technique. On the left-hand side there, you've got a piece of linen. Doesn't tell you very much, but you can see here there were rows of little woolen loops in colours. And you've got to look at a much better example in the Abegstiftung to see what that represented, a kind of tongue. And there it is again. And this snippet comes from the Elijah hanging in the Abegstiftung, a piece which is about 3 meters in each direction, showing Old Testament scenes, and one does actually wonder whether they were all like that and whether this points to a church in Berenike. But can you hang that on one tiny fragment? Possibly. Checks and cottons were, again, very common, something like 25% of the textile assemblage in the late period. So my wife went off and I to Kasr Ibrahim, well, not to Kasr Ibrahim, to Aswan, to look at the material from Nubia to see if we could find parallels. This is woven from S-spun yarn, so it's not Indian. It's from the Nile Valley. There are, however, Indian materials too. Resist-dyed fragments in blue, more of them, all very tiny. I thought at one stage they were hangings, but in fact they may well be clothing. If they were hangings, they look rather like that. Roman houses and big public buildings had a lot of hangings. Forget wall plaster. If you could afford it, you had a hanging. But the S-spun yarns were the biggest problem in the cottons. They look nothing special, and just occasionally we get something that's diagnostic, like this brocaded piece here, or a piece with decoration. At Kasr Ibrahim, in the heart of Nubia, in fact, there is nothing like this. There is no wool, there is no decoration, it's 100% cotton. So it wasn't woven there. So somewhere between Berenike and the other end of the Dodekaskoinos, there's an area which is producing these things. One can link them, perhaps, with the people called the Eastern Desert Dwellers, whom we shall probably hear more of today, people who we sometimes label Blemiers, who come in from the south, and they start eating sheep and goats on a very large scale and not eating anything else much, and they're wearing clothes from home. So we've got, in our textiles, we've got a lot of evidence for ethnic peoples moving around. It's a very changeable population. And late and early Berenike were great contrasts in themselves. But equally, they were always extremely exciting places to live, although one had to be pretty strong and businesslike to want to do so. Thank you.